This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into a brand new episode of Crossed Up. Anthony Sanfilippo's here. I'm Bob Wankel, and it is Friday, April 5th. Phillies looking for a little bit of a different outcome in this series against the Nationals than what they got against the Braves and Reds to start the series. A 2-4 homestand, Anthony. Phillies outscored 39-25. Negative 14 run differential. Only three teams in baseball so far have a worse run differential than the Phillies. Not great. Today, I guess, you know, I think it's kind of digesting what we've seen. How much of it is real? How much of it should we be worried about, annoyed about? And I think we all understand it's early. It's six games. You can't freak out. This is a good team. It has a pedigree. There should be some level of trust. But that doesn't mean that this start hasn't been, how do I say this, for fans?
Underwhelming.
Annoying as shit.
It has.
Or underwhelming. Underwhelming works too. I think it's been annoying as shit.
Yeah, I guess for fans, it's annoying as shit. To me, it's been underwhelming. As someone who's down there all the time, yeah, you look at it and sit there and say, look, I thought they would be 4-2 after six games. So to be 2-4 is not a good start. By the way, I love the fact that we both were red hoodies today without talking.
This is not a Phillies hoodie, by the way.
Neither is this. Mine's a Wawa hoodie.
Okay. I got my throwback Triton baseball hoodie from our dynasty years back in 2019. So
anyway, but I agree. I understand why it's frustrating as hell. I understand why it's disappointing. And yeah, I mean, look, they need to get off to a better start. The thing that I don't like is you sit there and say they've played six games. Well, they didn't get off to the good start that they said they wanted to get off to. Yeah. I think that they meant over the first, when they said get off to a good start, they meant over the first 2 months of the season. So to sit there and say, well, they just didn't get off to the good start that they promised because they went 2-4, I think that's a little disingenuous because there's still time to get off to a good start. But yeah, if you're looking at the beginning of the good start, 2-4 is not as good as it would have been if you went 4-2. I think if they would have gone 3-3, everybody would have accepted it. And there are good things to identify. Like, I honestly, you can't look at the hard numbers, but I honestly think their pitching's been pretty good.
Oh, I agree. I fully agree. I think the starting rotation has been as advertised, Aaron Nola aside in his first start. I mean, you go through that rotation now one full time and Wheeler twice. And I would say remove Aaron Nola, and every single one of these starts has been good, which in a way is even more frustrating that you're getting that type of starting pitching and you're losing these games. I mean, what Spencer Turnbull gave you and what Christopher Sanchez gave you and what Zach Wheeler has given you, like, you got to win these games, man. Like,
For sure. There's no question about it. And I think that ultimately they will. They just have not hit. And let's be honest. I mean, with the exception of Schwarber and then the one game that Harper went off, and Marsh has been good. No one's hit. So that's the thing. I mean, you're really looking at two guys who've been consistent and seven guys who haven't. And that's the biggest issue to me right now with the team. Hitters usually take a little bit longer than pitchers to get kind of into it, but yeah, I mean, that's where I think the disappointment has to fall. And you could break down to individual players who are even more disappointing individually amongst those seven. There are some that are more disappointing than others. That's, to me, where the problem in the first six games lies.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, listen, you got one epic game from Bryce Harper, but in the other four of which he's played, he's done nothing. So that's hurt you. But I think that the group that you really focus on are these right-handed hitters right now. I mean, they've been dreadful collectively. And, you know, certainly Trey Turner, I think, jumps off the page 5-for-23, 5.25 OPS. Castellanos has been absolutely dreadful. He's hitting 150 with a 4.42 OPS. I want to talk about Johan Rojas a little bit in isolation in a few minutes here. He's 1-for-15. He's hitting 0.67 with a 2.43 OPS. Here's the deal. Philly's right-handed hitters through six games have been just collectively dreadful. And yeah. I actually want to tell you how dreadful they've been. As a group, Philly's right-handed hitters batting 193 right now, ranks 28th in baseball. They have a 228 slugging percentage, Anthony. It's dead last in the sport through 1 week. Tied for last in home runs. They've only hit one home run as a group. It was JT Realmuto. Tied with the Guardians in that respect. They have a negative 0.7 war already as a group of right-handed hitters. I mean, it's just terrible. And you know, listen, do I think that Whit Merrifield's going to hit 143 this season? No. I like what I've seen from Realmuto in the early going. But the two guys that really stand out to me, aside from Johan Rojas, it's Trey Turner and it's Nick Castellanos. And
yeah.
The reason why is because we saw Castellanos in 22 have this nightmare year and he couldn't get out of it. He couldn't rebound. He was sort of in this fog all year. And you just hope and you see what he's capable of doing. And he did it for stretches, for prolonged stretches last year. But even last year had that like roller coaster vibe to it for him. You just feel like it's so important for this guy to get off to a good start. And he's been bad. And then you saw, obviously, what happened with Turner last year. Like, I don't want to go all like WIP, like hot take radio here, but like there has to be at least some level of concern, like a minor level of concern with Trey Turner right now. Like, you can sit there and look at his year last year and say, well, he got out of it. And so that sets a precedent. We should be confident that he's going to be able to have a big year and that a bad stretch at the start won't bury him. But like, come on. Like, this is a player making $27.5 million this year. Like, they need him to be great. The Phillies need him to be a top 20 player in baseball and not a 200 hitter with shoddy defense. And it's just like, it has not been a reassuring start. I will say that.
No, it has not. The one thing that I could say about Castellanos, he has had some swing and miss again, right? He at least is seeing a lot of pitches. And he just seems to be just a little bit off on his
swings have looked defensive to me.
Yeah,
he's made some weird contact.
Weird contact.
In terms of going outside the zone, like that's a big focus for everyone, right? The Phillies have struck out 54 times in six games, so they're striking out about 9 times per game, which seems like a lot, but when you actually level that out across the sport, it's about league average, 9 strikeouts per game. It's like middle of the pack. And when you look at the Phillies' chase rates, it's pretty consistent with what they were as a team a season ago. They're 7th right now in baseball and swinging at pitches outside the strike zone. So but that's their DNA. Like, and this is the thing that I want everyone to understand. We talk about plate discipline and we talk about, you know, pitch selection and obviously plate discipline is a good thing. You want to have more of it than less of it. And you want to swing at the right pitches. But you almost wonder sometimes, like, do these things take precedence over being aggressive and actually doing damage? And when I look at Nick Castellanos specifically, I see a guy that it feels like he's very aware of all of the things that he knows are perceived to be his weaknesses. Like, it just, when he's at his best, he just gets in the box and plays and he locks in and he hits and he swings and he doesn't seem to be thinking about a million different things. When he's not at his best, like, you can almost see the hesitation in his game. And
yeah, well,
that's what I see from him right now.
It's interesting. And this is where I was going to go with this, Bob. He actually is tied for the team lead in walks with 4. And he's not a guy who walks. And we talked about this a little bit last year, because if you remember during spring training, he was walking a lot because he was trying to get, you know, be a little bit more selective, swing at strikes and things like that. And I just think that he's not a guy who feels comfortable doing that. And it might be a thing where they're trying to convince him that he needs to play that way and he's trying to do it, but that eventually he's going to be a guy that goes, you know what? I'm not going to take these pitches. I'm just going to go up there hacking.
Right.
And then he'll get hot because he's seeing the ball well, right? And he'll go hot and he'll be streaky as he's always is. And he'll just put together a Nick Castellanos type season like he did a year ago. And you said it, and we were sitting in the press box and you said, if he gives you what he gave you a year ago, you take it. No matter how it comes to you in the end of the season, if he's hitting 272 and he's putting up 100 RBIs and he's around 30 home runs, you're taking that, right? I mean, he's batting 7th in your lineup, for God's sake. So if that's your number 7 hitter, that's fantastic. You know, like, you'll take that for a season. It's just that we have to endure the down times with him, and his downs are really low. And that's the one thing with him.
Yeah. I think that the talent hasn't diminished year over year. Like, I think that that player that hit 272 and hit 29 homers and had 70 extra base hits, like, that guy's there. There's no doubt. What you worry about, though, is just all the other stuff. Yeah. You know, he is a guy that is very insightful. He's very perceptive. He talked at length multiple times last year about what he went through in 2022, how he had to get to a place of comfort. There's a lot of thinking going on with him. It's not like grab bat. You remember, you know, the biggest lie in all of this was when he first signed here. It was like, you know, I didn't go to college. I just, you know, I hit baseballs. Like, it's that simple. And when you talk to him and you observe him, you know, it's not just grab bat, see ball, hit ball. It's all this other stuff. And you just kind of hope that he, if this start continues to drag on, doesn't get totally thrown off the tracks here. Now, that being said, they see Patrick Corbin tonight, who that's a gift from the gods. I mean, he's terrible. He's a terrible pitcher. 5.20 ERA last year. Righties lit him up, hit over 300, had an OPS in the 800s. He gave up 29 home runs to right-handed hitters last year.
Yeah.
So if there was ever a night for a get-right game for this group that's been slow out of the gates, it's tonight.
Yeah, and another interesting thing with Castellanos, I don't know if you caught this, Bob, and they try, you know, I know that Pagan made fun of him on Crossing Broad, and then Ricky Bowe had a kind of a weird reaction, but I'll tell you, I think that I get it. Castellanos is distracted in the outfield by the new scoreboard. And it's not the same. He's saying it's not the same. And, you know, I know Ricky Bowe says, well, yeah, but outfielders count steps and they know whatever. But if you are used to there being something out there, and then all of a sudden, as you're tracking a ball, you see things flashing behind you, whether it's like the changing lights of the scoreboard or whatever, like, it's going to throw you off. I don't care how you know, I count seven steps before I hit the warning track, whatever it is, right? I still think that the in-the-moment visual of, oh, shit, I'm getting closer to that thing, can throw you off a little bit, too. I side with Nick Castellanos on this. I do. I think that that's a tough adjustment for a right fielder who's used to playing out there.
Yeah, I know that this story has gained some traction. And my only thought is, you go back to Sunday where Johan Rojas beats out the double play ball and extends the inning. And Rob gets up there and talks about it and how it was the most important play of the game, and really kind of goes out of his way to do his player a favor, right? Kind of goes to bat for him, tries to give the kid some confidence. This to me was the total opposite. Like, Rob, what are you doing? Why would you bring this up? Why would you say, like, there's no way that this media, this fan base, after this start, wants to hear that, right? Like, it can be true, as you said. Like, there's probably something to it, despite what Ricky Bowe has to say about counting steps. Like, the player feels it. He relayed the message. Fine.
Yeah.
But, come on, Rob.
Yeah,
like, if I'm the Castellanos, so I'm going like, yo, man, come on. Did we have to put that one out there?
Yeah.
There's no win on that. You're not.
Yeah, I agree.
You're not going to come away from it looking good. It sounds like an excuse.
Yeah, it's one of those things where that's the real reason, and Rob probably didn't have to say that was the real reason, and you just let it go because it'll get better, you know, and after a few more games, and then you just kind of forget about it, right? Whereas now it's a thing, and now people are going to be watching for it. And that's, you're right. That's, Rob should have let that one alone.
So you kind of go through this start, and I feel like it's a waste of space. It's a waste of time to be like, well, you know, it's six games and you can't get too high. You can't get too low. Like, all right, we all understand that. I guess in addition to some of the offensive struggles, the thing that I am most concerned about, I think currently in this moment, is the way the roster is constructed in terms of what's going on in the outfield. I have some concerns about this, and I guess hear me out here, because I don't really quite understand. I mean, I understand what they're doing, but I don't like it. So you have Johan Rojas, who can hit or is not hitting or whatever, and you're playing him. They might play him less if he can't get it going. Okay. And then you have Christian Pache, who you don't want to take important at bats late in the game. Like, you're just not interested in that, clearly. So you have an insurance policy for Rojas in case you have to probably send Rojas down. You want that defensive first kind of option out there. So now you have two spots, which really kind of hamstrings you late in the game when you're looking for a right-handed pinch hitter. And we saw that play out the other night. So, you know, they go, I guess it's what, the seventh inning, they're down 3-1. It's bases loaded. Brandon Marsh comes to the plate against the lefty and they allow him to hit. I think it was Justin Wilson of the Reds.
Yep, correct.
Keep him in the game. And it's like, here's an important situation, go get him. And I would love to say, well, that's cool because Brandon Marsh has been one of the few Phillies right now that looks consistently interested and consistently dialed in. And he's had a couple decent swings against left-handers. Let's give him a shot in a big spot here. But then also you didn't want to play Brandon Marsh against left-handers last weekend and you sat him twice. So to me, it's like, which one is it? Do you trust him or do you not? And if you don't trust him to start a game and get some bulk ABs against a left-hander, then why are you letting him take the most important at bat of the game against a lefty the other night? And in part, it's because they don't have a good right-handed bat off the bench. Now, they had Boehm available, but presumably they were saving Boehm in the event that Rojas came up. Like, the whole thing just is so disjointed. And to me, it's like, if you're going to have Rojas on this roster, and I've rethought this because in the spring, I didn't really care. But as you watch it play out, you're like, if you have Rojas on this roster, having Pache on it with him, like, I get that he's an insurance policy, but like at some point you're going to have to use the insurance policy and break this up.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It really gets to a point where you probably have, I guess it depends on what your situation is, on who you started. Because we ran into this a little bit in the game when they actually won against the Reds, where they had the lefties on the bench. And we talked about this where, you know, you had Marsh or Stott, you know, who was coming off the bench first in that game. Was that the Braves? That was the Braves game. Yes, it was the Braves, yeah. Not the Reds. We talked about this on Monday. So, you had two lefties coming off the bench, and so the question was in which order, but you were pinch hitting twice. So if you are in a situation where you look at a lineup and say, I might have to pinch hit twice, then you're right, because now you've basically have no second option if it's got to be a right-hander. If it's got to be a right-hander, if you need to pinch hit twice in a lineup, sometimes you might have two lefties, but you don't have two righties, because you're not going to pinch hit with Pache. You're likely not pinch hitting with Sosa. And if you have a guy, a regular out of the lineup that's right-handed, that's your one pinch hitter, and you got to save him for Rojas.
Right.
Right? I mean, really, that's what it's come down to. And Rob even said, we talked to Rojas, you know, before the season. He knows that if we're down in a game and we need a hit, that we're going to bat for him, so seventh inning or later, probably. Okay, fine. Like, he knows that's there. Well, if that's really the game plan, then you've pigeonholed yourself into allowing the other team to get the matchup that it wants against everyone else, because you're so locked into having a pinch hitter in that spot for a guy who can't hit.
And I'm not saying that they have to make a roster decision this weekend. Again, we talked about 25, 30 games probably being the baseline for testing this. I just think I know where it's headed. Surprise me, I guess, but it seems pretty clear where this thing's going. And, you know, one of the things that I've been looking at here specifically is with Rojas, like 1-for-15, you can talk about the batting average, all that. You tweeted it out the other night, and we were talking about it on Wednesday during the marathon rain delay. He hasn't hit a ball out of the infield yet. I mean, it's not good, man. Like, it's not like he's hitting some scorchers all over the field and it's been a product of bad luck and it's 15 at bats and you can't judge him off of that. Like, the contact has been poor. He's not driving the ball at all. He didn't hit in the spring. He didn't hit last October. It's like I said on Monday, like, you can't judge things after six games, but you have a set expectation or a set belief coming in. Like, I believe that the Phillies bullpen is good. I'm not going to let a couple Connor Brogdon appearances alter that.
Right.
I don't know that Johan Rojas can hit. So the six games that have occurred here, it's not that I'm giving up on the guy, but like, he just has not moved my evaluation of what it is right now. And that's sort of the way that I'm going about this.
Yeah, as you should, because it's really, I don't even know how to describe what it is right now, Bob. I mean, the guy's what? If you go, if you take postseason, spring training, and the start to this season, I mean, I think he's got I think he's like 14 for 107.
I
think that's what it is. Like, it's 14 for 107. Like, that's terrible.
Well, here you go. I kind of dug this up today. I was writing the newsletter, redoctoberphilly.com. I'm plugging it mid-show, not at the end.
I even have it on the screen already. Look at that. Look at that. Look, perfect timing. I already have had it scrolling across the bottom.
So here you go. 78.3 mile per hour average exit velocity. That's the third lowest of any player who has put at least seven balls in play this season. Is a 9.1 hard hit percentage. That's also the third lowest. You know who he's ahead of? A guy named Ernie Clement and Whit Merrifield. So the contact has just been dreadful. And can he get it going? Maybe. But I just think that you get to the end of April and you're going to have to make a decision. And it's going to come down to either he hits and this stays as is. You send him down to AAA, let him play every day, see what happens, continue to work on the swing. You bring up a more offensive-minded, right-handed type bat. Maybe it's Weston Wilson. I don't know like where they go there with that. But you bring up a right-handed type of bat that can hit a little bit, and you pair it up with Pache, or you send out Pache, and Rojas becomes that late-inning defensive replacement. They go that direction.
See, what you could do, and this is the thing, when you mentioned Weston Wilson, and what you can do is, like, look, I like Johan Rojas, and I root for the guy. Like, I want to see the guy succeed. But I don't think the Phillies are putting him in a position to succeed. So what you do, and what makes sense and follows along the same kind of game plan that you currently have but gives you better options, is let Rojas go down to the minor leagues, take some pressure off the kid, let him figure the swing out down there in those games. Meanwhile, you can use Pache in the same role as you're currently using Rojas and have another bat come up and be that guy who's going to bat for Pache late in the game. You could do the same concept with the players you already have here and strengthen your bench a little bit. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I mean, Christian Pache is not going to hit 280, right? If you played Christian Pache every day, he's going to bat 215, right? Yeah. 220. The Phillies would take that out of Johan Rojas. Right. They would take 215, 220 out of Rojas. We're like, as good a defensive player as he is, if he hits 215, 220, we're thrilled. Okay, great. Well, he's not even hitting 100. So let him figure out his swing, not at the major league level, at the minor league level. Let Pache go in and do the same, basically the same thing he's doing, but have another bat off the bench who's better to come into those spots and kind of gives you a little bit more of an option to have. Then you'd have maybe Merrifield and Wilson on the bench. Right? Or Wilson and one of the lefties, if it's against the left, whatever the case might be. You have a couple of options you could go to as pinch hitters, as opposed to pigeonholing yourself into saying, well, we can't bat for Brandon Marsh in that tough spot lefty on lefty because we got to save our one pinch hitter for Johan Rojas.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And it's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out. You know, one of the other things that I guess jumped off the page at me here this first week was the base running. And I had asked you about this the other day, and this drives me nuts as a former coach, because as we all know, baseball is a game of uncontrollables. Like, there are so many different factors and variables that you just simply do not have control over. There are certain things you can control, though, and base running is one of them. And when I look at the Phillies with the slow start stuff, and we got to come out sharp, and we got to come out and play well from the jump, you talked about it. Is that about the first six games of the season, or is that about the first month or two? My issue is this. Guys don't look totally ready. Fine. There's a ramp-up period. It's cold. The weather has sucked. There's a lot of different ways that you can sort of just explain away a slow six games. The thing that drives me crazy, though, is what we saw, especially this week against the Reds. Like, you have in a tie game late the other night, Johan Rojas enters the game as a pinch runner. He's picked off on an inside move at second base. Like, that cannot happen. That can never, ever, ever happen. And I know that Rob Thompson's talking about, well, we didn't see his inside move before. What the hell does that even mean? Like,
right.
What? Come on, man. Like, you know that. You know. And I'm not asking him to drive the bus over the player, But like you cannot accept that. Like that just cannot happen. You know, and then in the same game, you have Bryson Stott picked off late in the game, tie game. Like that, like so you're giving them two free outs there. Your offense is already scuffling as it is. Then you fast forward to Wednesday night, and you have Nick Cassianos in the second inning getting picked off against a right-hander. And it's just like
that was a hit, and he tried to turn into a
right. Yeah, yeah. No. Cassianos was picked off the other night, caught stealing.
Oh, that one too. Yeah, you're right.
But yeah, and then you had him stretching out the double against, right. I think that was Atlanta on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you right there over a four-game span going back to Sunday gave teams a free four outs right there. Like, just to me, that's a thing where is that symptomatic of a team that is simply trying to do too much and wants to get off to that start, trying to make a play, trying to gain that extra inch? So is it pressing or is it a lack of focus? And to me, like, it's a lack of focus, and it's stupid because each one of those individual outs, you play 162, this is going to happen from time to time. But for it to happen that frequently and that many times in that short of a span, like, come on, guys. Like, that's – you can control that. And that, to me, is something that you should be annoyed about.
We saw that, Bob, at the beginning of last year, too, if you remember.
Oh, they were horrendous. I mean, for the first, I want to say, 5 or 6 weeks of the season, it was basically – it was comical. How many outs they ran themselves into.
Right. It was terrible. But it played into that slow start. It was part of the reason you had a slow start a season ago is because you just were so stupid on the base paths. So you can lose games because of it. There's no question that you could, it changes flow and momentum in a game. It could be a big play like the one Rojas getting picked off. That's a chance to win the game right there. And you lose it because you go to extra innings and then Connor Brogdon happens, right? So, you know, that's a swing, a two-game swing right there on that one play. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, these are important times in the game that you just need to focus, man. Yes, you're going to get picked off from time to time. Yes, you're going to get thrown out trying to stretch a hit, right? But when you know you got to get off to a good start, make the smart play now. I'd rather you make the safe play now than be uber aggressive. Be uber aggressive later in the year, right?
Right.
I'd rather you make the smart play now when you know that the team's offense isn't where it needs to be. You want to be aggressive when the offense is rolling, go nuts, right? Take that extra bag, whatever, and if it works, great. If it doesn't work, okay, I get it. All right, it happens. But in the moment when you realize that the team's only getting five hits in a game, don't try and create something that's not there.
As we're recording this, the Philly City Connect jerseys have been dropped here officially. I will say, I told you the other day when the earlier leak had come out, which is correct. This is the jersey. Yeah. I said it looked like the Sunday softball uniform, like you're playing a bakery softball team or something like that, and they show up on Sunday morning. But I will say, as I look at the full thing, they have apparently, it looks like, I guess these are black pants. It might be navy. It's kind of hard for me to see based on the picture I'm looking at. I do like the darker shade of the pants. Looks okay. It would have been horrendous with lighter pants, that's for sure. And I like the hat. I do like the hat. I do not like the jersey. I don't like the script on the front. You know, I don't want to turn this into a fashion podcast, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't hate this as much as I thought I did about 48 hours ago, but I still don't love it.
I don't like it at all. I don't like it at all. I mean, there's nothing. First
I'm
of all,
in on the hat, man. I sort of like the hat.
The bell?
Yeah, it's all right.
It's all right. It's okay. I'm okay with the hat. I just, I don't know.
I think it is for me, unless like I'm missing something. Granted, I'm not a city guy. I'm a South Jersey suburban guy. Does anybody really associate with the flag, like the city of Philadelphia flag? Like, I know the Eagles did that back in whatever it was, like the Kevin Curtis game against the Lions years ago. They wore the you know, the city flag colors. I just don't. I don't know.
This is the funniest thing, you're saying this, and I'm looking at it on my phone, and as you say it, my younger son Andrew, not Anthony, my younger son Andrew sends a message. Can uniform designers please stop using the Philly flag for inspiration? The colors suck. As you're saying it, that text comes through from my son.
Yeah, like I don't know, I don't love them. I just don't hate them as much. Yeah, I don't. Oh, here you go, and. I'm going full sports writer here. I've now morphed fully into a grumpy sports writer. Here's Kevin Cooney on my Twitter feed. A slow pitch softball team would reject uniforms that look like this. So. Yeah.
Well, I don't like, I really don't like the script on the front.
Yeah. I don't love the numbers on the back either. I don't saw the back of it.
There's a lot that I don't like about it. First of all, I don't like Philly. I just don't like Philly.
You don't like Philly, huh?
I don't. I think that
Macnell's not a fan. He's asking if it's the worst since the Eagles canary uniforms.
Yeah. I don't like that it says Philly. If it said Phillies, I would be okay with probably a little bit more okay with that. I just don't like Philly.
I don't want to spend too much time.
I don't like the font. The font is bad. I don't like the textured font that they've used, right? I mean, I don't like the fact that it's textured. I don't like that it's a mismatched blue, like with the pants and the shirt. I would rather that be all one uniform color, kind of like, oh, I don't know, they're throwbacks that they wear when you have the powder blues that's all one color. Like, stick to one color. Is it navy blue, or are we going with the Swedish flag blue? Like, that's where I don't know. Yeah. I'm really not a fan. I don't mind the patch. I actually kind of like that. If you're looking for something to like, I like the patch with the love, with the bell is the O. Right, like that's the brotherly love thing. I'm cool with the patch if you want something, and the hat is okay, but the jersey itself I think is terrible.
Well, what's interesting, you pointed this out, they're going to wear these things 12 times this season, I believe, and everyone loves the powder blue Thursday throwback jerseys. And would you count them up? You said they play seven games at home this season.
Seven, it would have been eight, but they lost opening day, so it's down to seven. And then they got these, they have 12.
Yeah.
So they're going to wear this more than they're going to wear the powder blue.
And as I pointed out to you, though, nobody would prefer to see this more than the powder blue. They haven't sold these jerseys yet. So.
Yeah. And I guarantee, I know this city. And if I'm wrong on this, Bob, I will come on this podcast and say,
they're going to sell the hat, Anthony. They're not going to sell the jersey. There's not going to be a lot of those jerseys floating around. I really don't think so.
I promise you, we will still see more powder blue than we will of this disaster.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. I will agree with that. So I want to look a little bit ahead here before we wrap it up today. I just want to know, will Aaron Nola take the momentum that he gained this week? And I'll get to this in a moment. Will he take the momentum that he gained this week into his start tonight against the Washington Nationals? And in case you missed it, Aaron Nola's ERA dropped by nearly two full runs this week, because Alec Boehm was charged with an error on Ronald Acuna Jr.'s leadoff single on Saturday afternoon. So this saves Aaron Nola an earned run. He drops from 14.54 down to 12.46.
And only 11 hits instead of 12.
Hey, things are looking up for Aaron Nola. So in all seriousness.
Let's be honest, Bob. It was an error.
It was. I mean, I know, there, I know he's got some wheels, but I mean, he was about a third of the way down the baseline when that ball hit off of Alec Boehm's hand. So they got that one right.
Yes.
It just took them a few days. Aaron Nola tonight. We talked a little bit about him. Not much at all, really. He was obviously not great against the Braves on Saturday. I said give it three starts. I think given what I've seen from the Nationals so far, I'm willing to give it about two starts. He needs to show up tonight.
Oh, I think so. I think you're right. I mean, you can't have another bad outing today, right? I mean, you just can't. Look, there's more of a spotlight on you now. It just is. I mean, you're here for 7 years. You signed a big money contract. You can't have, you know, regular inconsistency. There needs to be the start that happened against Atlanta can happen. It just can only happen like once every 7-8 starts. You can't start throwing two of them into every six, right? I mean, that you can't have that kind of inconsistency. So yes, he definitely needs to have a better game today, tonight against the Nationals.
Yeah, well, and we'll see. I mean, listen, this is a series where, again, I don't want to get into must win, have to sweep, have to take two out of three, but when you try to separate overreaction from taking a realistic, fair look at things, 2-4 is one thing. It can't turn into 3-6 and 4-8. And like you at some point have to start winning some series here, or this thing is going to reach a point where you're going to need to rip off 5 out of 6 or 6 out of 8 to get yourself out of a hole, you know, and they really need to try to avoid that. They're a game behind Atlanta. They haven't done – the Braves weren't able to run away with like a 5-0 start or anything like that to really gain crazy separation right off the bat, which is what that – which is what avoiding the sweep allowed the Phillies to do, is to avoid that, oh, my God, we're already 3 games out right away. But, you know, you don't want to get into a position where you're 4 games behind 10 games into the season. So, like, hey, go win a series here, man.
Yes, and the schedule is your friend right now. This is you gotta get off to that good
Washington
start.
Stinks. Like, one thing I've learned the first week is that the NL East, that I probably gave the NL East more credit.
I did too.
Than I should have. And again, you know what? I'm not even gonna say it's early. The National League East stinks. Like, once you get past the Phillies, like, the Mets are brutal. You know, they won yesterday 2-1 in the 9th inning on a walk-off. They were getting no hit until the 8th inning yesterday. Yeah. In game two, after they blew a 3-0 lead in game one to the Tigers. And I know that Detroit's, you know, spunky and all that, but like, come on. So, you know, you look at this Mets team, I don't think that they can hit. I don't like the rotation. I don't like the vibe of that team. Lindor has been absolutely dreadful. You think like Trey Turner's been bad?
Yeah.
Go look at Lindor's numbers. I just think that team flat out stinks. The Marlins might win 50 games. Like,
they're 0-8.
0-8 right off the bat. Perez now, Tommy John. Like, that is going to be tough. And I think that they're going to sell too. They look like they're on the brink of just stripping it again and starting again from scratch.
You're already talking about, there's already talk out there that Arise and Luzardo are both going to be available. These guys are in their 20s.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah. So you have that. And then I called the Nationals interesting, and they do have some interesting young players, but
They're not ready.
They're not ready.
Yeah. They're not ready. No.
I think you look at the probables. If I'm not mistaken, I don't have it in front of me. It's Corbin Irvin, I believe, tomorrow. And then Mackenzie Gore, I think, goes on Sunday. And so, like, I just this is a team that probably loses upwards of 93, 95 games. So
is Brandon Marsh sitting 2 out of these 3 games, Bob, because they're facing the lefties?
Well, this is what I wonder, you know, and this is what it kind of comes back to. It sort of ties in a little bit to the Rojas conversation. It's just like, my thing with Marsh is just, there's a smart way to do it. And I think Brandon Marsh, to his credit, understands the situation. Like, he's a really good teammate, and he's like a really good guy. He's competitive as hell. He wants to win. He wants to start, but he also is not a guy that will turtle up or become a destructive force because he's not getting these starts. Like, he really has the right approach to it. But if I'm him, I'm kind of going, you know, one, I think I have it in me. Give me a shot. And two, like, look at what's around me here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sitting at the expense of this.
Yeah.
And so for him, that's got to be a little bit frustrating. And it's like, are you doing the player a favor by giving him these bats late in games? Like, they let him hit the other night against the lefty, against the Reds. Is that like doing him a solid, or is it not? Because it's almost like now you're giving me the at bat. Like, now you're letting me take it. How about maybe letting me get another 3 or 4 bats against the lefty earlier in the week and give me a real shot at this? Like, I just think it's obviously not an ideal situation. The Phillies have to navigate it, and it's not always going to be smooth, and there's going to be some disjointed situations like this. I'm not saying they got to be perfect about it, but they have to do a better job, I think, of managing the balance here. I would hope that he doesn't sit both of those games. I think he deserves to start at least one of them.
Well, I would think tonight's especially. I mean, Corbin's a little bit more of a soft tosser, kind of like this would be a lefty to go, and, you know, this would be a lefty to prove yourself against, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, he stinks. So, yeah, like, I think this is a game that we should see Brandon Marsh face against a lefty.
But if that happens, who's that at the expense of? Because you want to get Merrifield going. He's been bad. So this is an opportunity to get him rolling. If you want Johan Rojas to have a shot at any point, this is a guy that you would want him to face. So, like, it's easy to say, like, yeah, it makes sense for Marsh to be the guy. But then if you're Rob and you're like, we're trying to make Johan Rojas work, this is a good matchup to let him get an opportunity. And we need Whit Merrifield to get going. So this is good. You know, that's the issue.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Bob, we just had a thing here. I don't know if you had it over in New Jersey as we're recording this. And I thought it was a truck passing
by.
Yes,
I felt that as well. I didn't know what the hell that was.
There was an earthquake.
That's what that was, huh?
There was just an earthquake as we were recording.
Okay.
And like the whole, like the house was shaking. And I was like, was that a big truck that passed by? It was an earthquake. We sat through, we recorded through an earthquake. We could now put that on our, you know, resume that Crossing Broadcast, or the Crossing Broadcast, Crossed Up was recording during an earthquake, and we plowed through it.
So I live over in like West Deptford, Woodbury area. And my backyard backs up to a lake, and across the lake, there's trains. Like there's a train track, and there's a train that goes through it twice a day. And I don't even notice it most of the time, right? So I just thought, damn, the train must have some extra cargo on it or something today. But no, earthquake. Okay, great.
Yeah, we just had an earthquake.
My reading was a 4.8 on the Richter scale. Is that what I'm seeing here?
Was it really? Is that what it was? Is that how high it was? It was. I felt it, man. Like it was rumbling. I was like, whoa, that was underneath me, man. Whatever that was, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at Twitter here, and we're going earthquake crazy.
Yeah.
And it was all the way out in the Lehigh Valley. I wonder what I don't know the technical term for it. I'm not a weather guy, but a geology guy or whatever this it falls under, but I wonder what the epicenter of it was.
Yeah, well, it's true. I mean, it was definitely something here that was pretty. It was pretty crazy.
What the hell is going on? I actually think we had an earthquake around here 10 years ago, somewhere around that. I was in a car over in like Deptford, by the mall, and I remember being in the car going like, "What is going on here?"
I was in the car for that one as well, and I didn't even feel. I was just driving, and I didn't even feel it. And I was like, "Really?" Everybody's talking about it. I'm like, "I missed it."
Yeah,
I missed it.
Okay.
Anyway, I just thought it was worth bringing up. Yeah. My phone was blowing up about the earthquake as we're sitting here recording. So I just thought, and I felt it as it happened. People probably could go back and watch it on YouTube because I was like, you know, I kind of was like looking around as when it happened and said, what the heck is that? You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, time for one last thing.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, we talked about this privately. Actually, you know, I had sent it over to you, but you had already seen it. And I think it's got to be the thing we talk about. Pagan put it up on Crossing Broad. It has to be discussed. The Mets and the double play. The fact of the matter is that we love picking on the Mets. It's fun. They're just a disaster. But the reality of it is that breakdown by John Boy, and if you haven't seen it, go find John Boy. He did a whole breakdown on how the Mets don't like to break up double plays. It was fascinating, and he showed you how to find it yourself. Like you can go through like and look at it yourself, and how to search it on Baseball
Samurai. They have a film room
thing, and you can find it and look it up. And it was like 95% of the time, the Mets either don't slide into the bag, they slide early and just get out of the way, or they run through it or around it or out of the play. They don't try to break up the play at second base. And it's like, they don't know the rules. That was his.
And at least it explains why McNeil was so upset now, right? Like now at least you know, like, hey, in this clubhouse, we preach just taking a right-hand turn about 45 feet down the baseline. It was
the most fascinating thing that I've seen in a long time. I could not believe it when I watched. I was like, this is amazing that this is out there. And I'm stunned that it hasn't been picked up really like by like the New York media, and like they check in with the Mets and say, what's going on here? Like I was waiting for that story and I haven't seen it. Maybe somebody wrote it. I don't know, but I didn't see it in like the Athletic or New York Post or anything like that.
I'm going to keep an eye on them this weekend and see if they go in balls out now at second base to make a point. middle like infielders beware this weekend.
It was unbelievable. And it wasn't because it wasn't just one guy. Like, that's how it started. The breakdown starts with, okay, you had Reese Hoskins slide it into McNeil. He gets all upset, but the slide is a normal slide. Like, this is what you should do. Hoskins is sliding into the second base the right way. And so John Boyd breaks it down and says, well, let me look and see if how Jeff McNeil slides into second base. And he found that McNeil was constantly doing this. And it's like, okay, well, this is a and then he said, well, wait a second. What if other Mets are doing this? And he breaks it down even further and sees all these other team players are doing it as well. And then it's like, well, is our other teams doing this? And the answer is no. It's just the Mets. It's hysterical. It's a riot. It's so worth your time. If you haven't looked it up, look up I think he called them the nicest team in baseball or something like that, or whatever it is. The Mets don't like the Mets don't like to break up double plays. But find that on YouTube, and it's a 20-minute video, and it's worth every second.
That's excellent. I just got a text message here as we're talking that Howie Roseman sent the earthquake to steal the Phillies' thunder after the City Connect reveal. So, Howie, man, he's always up to something.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, listen, we'll be back next week, early in the week, likely Monday. Hopefully, for all of you listening, the Phillies get their first series win of the season. We'll see. You never know. And we will be back to talk about that. So you can follow Anthony on X or Twitter at AntSamPhilly. You can follow me at Bob_Wankel. You can read both of us on Crossing Broad. And be sure to check out the Red October Philly newsletter at redoctoberphilly.com. I think that should take care of all the different plugs. And we'll be back next week.